Good evening. I'm glad that we have the opportunity. It's been a little bit hard to find the dates, but Baruch Hashem, I have to thank President's Day. President's Day cleared a Monday evening for me. Monday evening is usually have to be in yeshiva, but because of President's Day, I don't have to be. So Baruch Hashem, I dedicated it to the women of our Beis HaKnesses. And the topic is an important topic. Topic of Bosu B'cholov, which is in a way one of the most vexing problems that we have in kashrus. You know, kashrus usually involves just keeping the non-kosher away. That's most of the effort that's in kashrus. There are two areas in kashrus where you have a problem beyond that, and that's when it comes to Pesach. Pesach, you can't keep the chametz away. When you have to produce matzah, for example, in a place that produces matzah, so the problem doesn't stop at the door. You brought everything kosher to Pesach till the door, but you have plenty of problems once you get in the door to make sure you keep it that way. And the same is true that we don't have the luxury of a separate milk kitchen and a separate meat kitchen. And consequently, if we have preparing meat meals and dairy meals, so we have to be very, very careful that we don't create problems after all the care we've already exercised to keep out of our house the things that shouldn't enter in the first place. It's a very, very important topic. In reference to the Macholos Asuras, the Torah writes, "V'nit meisam bom." V'nit meisam, in the literal meaning, means that it will render you tummy. But a Chazal darshan, and I presume the reason for it is that in Loshon Kodesh, the word tummy in all its forms is always spelled, the root is tes mem aleph. And here we have in it meisam without the aleph. Normally there should have been, after the mem, even if a silent aleph, but the aleph should have appeared. And here the aleph was dropped. And because of that, Chazal said that there's an allusion to a second root, not only the allusion of tumo, but unetamta, meaning from the word sotum, from something which is closed. And Chazal tell us unetamtem bom, that if we violate macholos asuras, the receptors of our spirituality become closed. And as the Ramchal writes, that in all of life we need inspiration. We need accessibility to Kedusha, to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, to draw, to reach appropriate conclusions in Ruchnius, and to act appropriately. But if a person violates Macholos Asuras, so the receptors of that wisdom of Kedusha become sealed. And they cannot properly assimilate the necessary inspiration that we need in life. So this is why we know in all the generations, kashrus has been one of the very, very big things that Klal Yisrael was most nefesh for, almost beyond any other mitzvah. And the Torah, in fact, when it writes about Macholos Asuras, what does it tell us? We just had it in Parashas Mishpatim a week back. That you should be a holy people, a people of Kedusha. You should not eat that which is treif, non-kosher. And it's described in what? We should be people of Kedusha. Kedusha implies a dedication of our lives to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, to the mitzvahs Hashem, to the derech that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam wants of us. And that's why these halachas are classified as part of inyanei kedusha, sanctity. And the Ramchal adds something which is very, very significant here. The Ramchal writes that let us not think for a moment that the problems of macholos asuras only with those things which are inherently unkosher. an unkosher type of animal, or perhaps even an avela or a trefa, an animal which died, an animal which has a deficiency in one of its internal organs. Not only that, but even those types of things, such as bosa v'cholov, where everything started off being fine, but the end result is inappropriate, also have the same quality that they undermine our ability to access Kedusha. So this is the mitzvah that we have of overseeing our kitchens. And we bear the responsibility. I should say you. It's not my responsibility. I have a wife for that. But we do. I'm serious. You know, I could minimally assist her. But the ones that have the responsibility, the ones that are there day to day to oversee it, are the people in my audience today. You bear that responsibility. And just as Chazal tell us that when it came to the Geula of Chodesh Nisan, b'schus noshim tzitkonius nigalu avosinu b'mitzrayim, it's b'schus noshim tzitkonius that we have the appropriate Kedusha that we have to have in everything that we eat. Not a simple task. It's a task that each and every one of you has dedicated a great deal of effort to throughout your lives. So it's important that from time to time we come and we consider some of the basic ideas, because we always have what to learn. And every time that I learn something, even things that I've learned before, I discover new things. Nothing's ever the same. It's not trite. There's always another dimension. And sometimes I wonder why, in fact, I was not perceptive to those dimensions earlier. They're so obvious. But the last time, and the time before, and the time before, when I looked at them, they weren't so obvious. And this time, they became obvious, and they're obvious. So it's worth, even if we have studied these halachas well, from time to time to review them. When we consider them again, inevitably, we come to some new insight. We realize something in a fashion that we haven't realized it until now. So I want to start off with really the most basic aspect of what we are in the kitchen, the most basic consideration, and we'll see, follow through a little bit how it applies to us in different circumstances. The notion of kosherizing utensils, pots, pans, etc. in the kitchen stems really from a parsha in the Torah that after the successful prosecution of the war against Midian, a large part of the booty of that war were all manner of utensils which had belonged to the people of Midian, and consequently they were used in the production of non-kosher food. So the parsha actually in Parshas Matos is to tell us how exactly we ought to go about cleansing them and preparing them for our use. But this is a halacha which stems all the way back from the very dawn of the Jewish people, while we were still not yet entered Eretz Yisrael, still under the tutelage of Moshe Rabbeinu. And then we find a very interesting thing. The halacha states that from the standpoint of the Torah, the only utensil which is unacceptable for use is a utensil which was used within the last 24 hours. For example, let's say I come home tonight, and I take the chicken soup or whatever, and I warm it up. I warm up the meatballs, and I wasn't paying attention. It's been a long day. And I take a milchik, a pot, dump the meatballs in, warm them up on the stove. And after they're piping hot, all of a sudden, when I take one look and I shrink back in horror, what did I do now? Now I have the meatballs and a milchik, a pot. Is it the pot kosher or the meatballs kosher? So here we have a very simple rule, generally speaking. But we're going to see soon there's a notable exception to it. But generally speaking, that if I use this pot in the last 24 hours for hot milchiks, a hot dairy meal, then I cooked now meat in it, so the meat is going to become basar b'cholov, is going to be treif. Unless we have that there are 60 times as much meat in the, as there was milk used in this pot. Now, that's the normal situation. So the first question, whatever anyone calls me, it asks me a shayla that he wound up at the wrong pot in the wrong place in the kitchen, is the first question is, when was it last used for hot food? Was it used within the last 24 hours or wasn't used within the last 24 hours? That's question number one. Now, Chazal instituted a very interesting din d'rabbanan. And that's really what we're more concerned with most of the time. It's not that often that somebody uses the same pot for basar and cholov on the same day. Happens once in a while, but I would say in 90-some-odd% of the shaylas that I'm asked, that's not what happens. It's probably upwards of 95%. Upwards of 95%, the problem is that the pot actually wasn't used in the last 24 hours. So, midoraisa, there should not be a problem of basar v'cholov. The Rabbanon instituted a problem, and the Rabbanon said that even a pot which is eino b'nyomo, in other words, let's say I cooked non-kosher, I cooked meat and milk in it more than 24 hours ago, it's still a problem, and it has to be kosherized, even though more than 24 hours have elapsed since it was used. Now, this is double-edged. In terms of the food that I cook in such a pot, the food remains unaffected. So even though the pot, let's say, so I have my dairy pot, I haven't used it for more than 24 hours, I warmed up the meatballs remain kosher. The pot, however, which has now been used for meat and for milk, so the pot has to be kosherized, has to be kashered. Now, a kid doesn't help me to say, well, I'll just wait 24 hours, and after 24 hours, there's no problem. No, a Chazal state legislated that even after 24 hours, we have to kosherize such a pot. Why? Because otherwise we're going to have confusion between a pot which was used within these 24 hours, not in the within 24 hours. So we have one universal rule. If we cook the wrong item and it's a milchik pot, and we cook fleishiks in it, it has to be kosher. But there's a significant difference in terms of how it impacts the food. If it had been used for a dairy within the last 24 hours, then it renders the meat non-kosher. If it hadn't been, the meat is kosher and the pot remains unkosher and has to be kosherized. Now, this consideration of the pot extends not only to the pot, but it extends to the pot cover too. Because of the fact that when it gets hot, the steam rises in the pot and hits the pot cover. So the pot cover is considered just as much part of the action as all the rest of the pot. And this is often a common problem that we have, is sometimes by mistake. If we have pots which are similar in size, and we wind up with the mix and match, you know, we have a fleishig pot and a milchik cover, or vice versa. So this is basically subject to the same type of rules that I've told you until now, that if it got hot, then inevitably what doesn't belong there is going to have to be kosher. Is the food kosher or not? That depends on principally upon if it had been used in the last 24 hours or not. But so the questions which arise concerning basar v'cholov concern the utensils that we use, the pot covers that we use, and the food. Yes.
So then, if the food is kosher, we don't know to use a milchik utensil or a fleishik utensil to eat these meatballs.
Since it's more than 24 hours since dairy was used in them, it's not considered halachically that it has any dairy in it. So therefore, yes, you eat it in your fleishige dishes with your fleishige silverware. Now this life would be simple if it were consistent. But all of life, the problem always arises the exceptions to the rule. And the exception to the rule is what really is vexing. Now, how do we learn anything? The truth is, our learning really should be a function of two things. It should be a function of learning. You know, we've gone to school, we've had teachers, we've learned, we've studied texts, we've learned. And it should be a matter of Messiah. That we grew up in a household. We saw our mother and our grandmother did it. And consequently, that should also inform how we act. Now, the best learning really incorporates both. When we have both the practical experience and the text learning and the formal pedagogical education, then we usually wind up with the best results. It's hard to learn everything from a sefer. It doesn't become real time, it's abstract. And on the other hand, it's hard to learn everything from practical experience, because we don't realize necessarily everything that's taking place and why it's taking place, and we misconstrue certain things that we see and certain things we just never see because they didn't happen that often. So if we combine the practical experience with the pedagogical, then we usually arrive at the best conclusion. And usually what happens is those that are involved in the academic sense have a sharper understanding of the academics from the practicalities. And from the academics, we understand better what the practicality should be. And if we're guilty of some mistake along the way, we catch it and we correct it. Now, one of the things, and it probably applies differently to different age levels in this room. One of the things which has sort of faded a little bit is, to a very large extent, the notion of power of a kelim. You know, when I grew up in my house, my mother, Allah Shalom, had a huge amount of power of a kelim. We had pleasure of a kelim, milut of a kelim, but a large amount of power of a kelim of every type one could imagine. And most people today, and especially younger people, parav is fading out. You know, there's milachiks, there's fleishiks. Now, the truth of the matter is that when we run, you know, commercial kitchens, that's the way we run them. We don't have parav, basically, in commercial kitchens. For the non-Jews that work in them, it's enough that they should understand that there's one side of the kitchen and there's the other side, and the twain shall never meet. Once they will have the notion that there's something that could appear on both sides of the kitchen, there's no end to what they're going to imagine, you know, you can do. So in commercial kitchens, even in health related, for example, where you tend to have, where you have to have milachiks and fleishiks in the same kitchen, but basically there's no such thing as parav. There's milachiks and there's fleishiks. Parav doesn't exist. Now the problem is, in our own households, it's not so simple to do. And I'll give you a very simple example. We have a category of things which we call dovah charif, sharp things. What are the sharp things that we typically use? Onions, garlics, lemons, pickles, scallions, leeks, horseradish, just to name a few. Now, the problem with them is they defy all the rules. Break all the rules. Normally, to make something treif, a lot of times, you know, people call me and I tell them it's not treif. I said, if you want to make a treif, you're going to have to work harder. It's not so easy to make treif. But there are some ways. Why? Because to make treif, basically, you have accomplished two things. It has to be hot, and it has to have been used for the last 24 hours. For example, it's a milchik pot, and I cooked a corn soup with milk in it, and now tomorrow I made a mistake, and I put the meatballs in it within 24 hours. So if it's presently not hot, or it hasn't been used in the last 24 hours, I stay out of trouble. Everything remains fine. But when it comes to sharp items break all the rules. And sharp items, we have the following. I don't need anything to be hot. If I take a milachik knife and I cut an onion, the onion is now milachiks. Now, that's despite the fact that there's nothing hot there, and despite the fact that this milachik knife has not been used, forget 24 hours, I didn't use it in 3 weeks for milachiks. And I know it's been absolutely clean. We scrubbed it clean with steel wool. There's no concern that there's anything, the slightest particle of milachik on it. And yet, it renders the onion becomes milachik. And this din, if I recall correctly, the Rashba from the Rishonim tells us that this is a din d'oraisa. It's not even a din d'rabbanan. So you can have real boss of a chalav. So now what happens is like this. You take an onion, you cut off a piece of the onion because you need it for a milchik meal. Now, waste not, want not. So what do you do with the rest of the oven? You put it back in the fridge. Tomorrow, it's time to make something fleishik. Take the onion, take a power of a knife, a fleishik knife, you cut it up, and you throw it into something fleishik. So now, without much effort, I've succeeded in making boss of a cholov. Which is the reason, really, this is the very, very big reason that you need to have power over things. You process things which are sharp, you should process them with power of a cutting boards and power of a knives, and you stay out of trouble. In the commercial area, well, listen, I am the chairman of the Kashrus at Avad, so when I'm in the commercial area where I hold sway, one of the things I try to institute is, if you take an onion and use half of it, the second half goes right into the garbage. The havoc that it can wreak in the kitchen is far more costly than throwing the second half of the onion away. Now the problem, we only touched the beginning of the problem. So now I took this onion and I cut it up with a milchik knife. The onion is milchik. Now if I put it into something fleishik, I put it into the cholent is boss of a cholent. So good, so then we understand that the cholent part will become treif because it was hot. But that's not the end all of the problem. The problem is the following. I have this half an onion and I take it, or even I cut an onion in half with a milchik knife, and now I put it into the food processor to chop it up. Now, the Chofetz Chaim paskens, it happens to be it's in Hilchos Pesach, in the name of the Mogen Avrom, that this not only affects the onion, but the onion now in turn can affect the blade of the food processor too. And the blade of the food processor now also becomes milchik. So tomorrow, when I'm chopping up an onion for parv, for use in the fleishig part of the kitchen, so I now have bosel v'cholov. So that's why this is an area that needs a great deal of attention. This is one of the easy ways to undermine the kashrus of the kitchen. Fortunately, we do have a circuit breaker. And that is, there is a view, and if things really get desperate, you know, I rolled this out. It's hidden away in one of my pockets, but I rolled it out. And that's the view. There's the view of the Chavos Das, who says that this can only affect foods. It can't go back again from the foods into the knives. That is not the position that we usually take. But sometimes, if you don't take that position, you're going to wind up that a person's whole house is treif. So, you know, it's not, it's a matter that needs a great deal of attention. So, parv kalim are a very, very important thing to have around in the house to prevent this type of problem. So this is one of the big things I want you to go home with, is the recognition of the necessity of parv. Now this also, hang on one second. Now this also affects the fact, if I take a milchik knife and I cut an onion on the power of a cutting board, the cutting board also has problems now. Right? There's controversy about it, but the cutting board has problems. I would consider the cutting board milchik at this point. So this is something that we do need to pay attention to. Now, before we go on, I just want to tell you the other fast way to get the kitchen treif. This is even better than Dovah Charif. And that is that the gloves that you use to handle hot pots is make sure that you have separate ones for the milchik, the fleishig, and the parv. Because they tend to get food on them from whatever you're handling. Things get on them. And then you're going to take fleishigs and you're going to pick up a hot milchik pot or vice versa. And this is the fastest way to get real boss of a cholov in the kitchen is by using the gloves on more than one sub, for more than one aspect of the kitchen, more than the milchik to the fleishig to the parv. So this is absolutely necessary that you have separate gloves for all of this. Yeah, there was a question here, I believe.
Yeah, is it just cutting the chametz foods, or is it like if you stick a fork in, would that also
make it? I don't believe that a fork would do it. A fork would not, but there's another aspect to this too, and that is if you take a fleishig spoon and you put it in the horseradish and you leave it there, that horseradish is going to become fleishig in short order. It's a very small amount of time. So when you're dealing with something charif, you should really use power of a kelim in it. If you have any intention of using it, you know, for more than one thing.
Wait, you're saying like the red horseradish that you use, you can't use a flacious clean spoon to stick it in there on your fish?
No. You should use, if your problem is, if you just put it in and you took it right out, you wouldn't have a problem. But if you left it there a little bit, you will have a problem. So you're far better off using a powerful one so you, that you know that it remains powerful. So, first and foremost, things that are harif, right? We have to process them in power of a kelim, if war, just make them in one type and use the whole thing up and make sure it doesn't go anywhere else.
How about mayonnaise?
Mayonnaise is not charif. But the problem with mayonnaise, again, you have to be careful because a lot of times the spoons that we put into it are not necessarily clean. So that you have to be very careful about. You're probably best off, again, using power of just in case you go back in the middle of the meal or something to it, something on it, you'll know that you're not putting meat into it. Yeah.
If you cut an onion with a carving knife, put not in a cutting board, but a dish like a corral or something like that.
Same problem. Same problem. It's milchik, not a good scene. So, yeah. That's not a problem.
Not a problem.
No, that's not a problem. No.
Okay.
Yes.
You
we'll get to that. A power of utensil going through a flasher dishwasher basically is mutter. But the only place that I would be machmer lechatchila in that is if you put a knife. Power of the knives you should be very, very skittish about. And any shayla that you have on a power of a knife, put it away for 24 hours, for scrub it clean, put it away for 24 hours, and put it into boiling water. Any time that you have a shiloh with power of a knives. Because power of a knives, for the reason that since we cut things like Dovah Harif, we can make very, very quickly the biggest problems. Yeah. That's what I'm telling you. Usually that's true. But the two exceptions to that are number one, with sharp items it makes no difference. And the second thing is if you have actual pieces of food, then it's not on the, let's say I take a flasher spoon and I put it into the mayonnaise, so now I have pieces of meat in the mayonnaise.
But otherwise perfectly clean, even if there were some particles of flasher on it, that would still make it if it were perfectly clean, or even if there were some particles of food, that would make the mayonnaise...
No, it would make whatever mayonnaise has meat on it, flash it. But, you know, then you're going to have a problem.
It's cold or...
Yes, correct. Correct, yeah, yeah.
Because it was interesting, in Eretz Casino Farms, which is a little bad, I did speak to Mashiach and your son was actually there, one of the sons, not the oldest son. But it's important because I went to the kitchen guy and all these things are just saying flesh and kalim, but I look at the ingredients and they have garlic and onions, and then that means we can't eat any of those salads with fish, basically. And I told the Mashiach guy, he said, When it comes to
we'll come to fish soon. I didn't talk about fish yet. Let's not jump. Fish has its own rules. Fish has its own rules. Now let me just tell you the following. I should be clear about this. Now those things you cut with a flasher knife. I cut an onion with a flasher knife. Now, let's say I put it into a salad, and I ate the salad. So the onion is flasher. However, the onion will not make you flasher. You don't have to wait 6 hours after you eat it. It's a complicated subject. I'm not going to attempt to go through it. There's a lot of rabbinic controversy about it, about that. I believe that, you know, this is the way Rav Moshe Feinstein with Paskin. That's the way I personally understood the halacha, the same way that he did. And as I came once when Chaim Eli got married in California. So at the Chasher, we were davening Marv, and I have a cousin who is one of the Ramam in Los Angeles and VTC. And he came over after by Marv, he says to me, he asked me a certain shayla, which had to do with this, with things that are fleshic, and but yeah, you don't have to, you have to wait 6 hours? Don't you have to wait 6 hours after them? And I told him, no, you don't have to wait 6 hours. And he asked me why, and I explained it to him, why I held that way. And then he told me that what had happened is that in Los Angeles, there's a very well-known person in the Kashrus, is Rabbi Eidelitz. And they asked Rabbi Eidelitz, and Rabbi Eidelitz gave him the same answer that I had. And they were rather astounded at the answer. So when I came, my cousin came to ask me what I held about it. He didn't tell me that it asked Rabbi Eidelitz yet about it. But he was even more astounded when I gave him exactly the same answer, the same rationale as Rabbi Eidelitz. So this is the type of thing which is fleshic. But after eating it, you would not have to wait 6 hours.
No, I know that I'm sick, but eating it.
We're not up to fish. Fish is its own world. Let's not jump. Fish has its own halachas. We'll get there. Now, if we've.
Can a car drive that has a shayla on the kasher if it has a plastic
handle? The question of handles is a very simple question, and that is, realize the technology that we have has undergone, probably in the last 50 years or so, a tremendous metamorphosis, which is, in earlier times, handles were made of wood, and the way they were made, they were fastened with rivets. It was very, very hard over time to have the handle sticking tightly to the blade, because all the washing, etc., the glue that they put in there loosened, and inevitably there was space in between. And particles of food got in between the handle and the blade. So such knives were considered non-kasherable. When the type of construction that we use today is a lot more sanitary, when we have plastic and it's fused together and there's no space, and there will never be space, so the halacha is that you can kasher it. Yes. We do allow for whole year use, not for Pesach use, but for whole year use, or Moshe Feinstein and many others allowed the kashering of plastic. Yeah. Yes. You know, the types of gloves are used that you have to handle hot pots.
Oh, you're not talking about when you're washing the dishes. You're talking
no, that's for sure you should have separate ones. That's the only thing to do.
No, what you, I was wondering if when you need separate when you're washing.
That's for sure.
But what happens if you have a disposable? And like, say you're cleaning one and doesn't, you know,
where
it's using the same for both
in
that day?
Listen, with the Eved, I wouldn't answer it for that reason, because they usually work with soap. So there's not that so much lesser problem. The problem that I was addressing was the type of gloves which are heat resistant that you handle hot pots with and you don't throw away. And they're usually not the cleanest things in the world. You know, just the inevitable nature of using them is they get soiled. Yeah. Question? Yeah. It doesn't, that it's thrown in is nothing. Just wipe it clean. We're going to take cold water and wash it well, and that's all. And you're fine. Now, we did discuss fish. So let's talk a little about fish. Now, fish is inherently a totally different halacha than bosel v'chalav. And that we find from very early poskim, the Shach, the Taz, that certainly if I cooked, I took a pot, I cooked fish in it today, and after I cooked fish in it, I cooked the roast beef in it the same day, or vice versa. I cooked the roast beef, and now I cooked the fish in the same pot. The halacha is that it's kosher, and you can eat it, assuming that I cleaned it before, and it's only a question of any flavor that may be absorbed by the pot. With meat and fish, this does not render it osser. There is very strong basis, though, to say lechatchila that that's not the way to go. In other words, on the same day, we shouldn't be using it for meat and fish. So that's the reason that many people have a separate pot that they use for fish, that they do not cook meat ever in for that reason. Because if it had been used on the same day for meat, then you shouldn't really, it's preferable, let's put it that way, not to use it for fish on the same day. If you did, it would not render the fish osser. The fish would still be mutter. Why? Because it has its own halachas. This is not a question of Isar. A Chazal felt that it was negative to our health to do such a thing. Whatever the reason and the basis, that's something that's clouded, you know, from our perspective. We don't know exactly why it is that way, but that's what we find in the Chazal and in the Shulchan Aruch. Now, consequently, with all of these other type of shaylas, if you're cutting onions, for example, with a knife which hadn't been used today, then it's certainly going to be fun. If you have everything powerful and you don't get involved in it, there's matoiv manoim, you know, lomalo. Why not? But if I took a fleishige knife and I cut an onion, and the fleishige knife hadn't been used in 24 hours, and I put it into the fish, there's not a problem with it. Again, preferably prepare with power of a kalim too. That's why it's not such a problem. The things that you're mentioning, once they are prepared, if you wanted to eat them with fish, if the sole question is that they were cooked with fleishige knives, there's not a reason that you shouldn't eat them with fish.
The one that's made in
meat water. Oh, there is. That you do have to know. But apparently, there's a whole section at Aaron's Casino Farms where they have some of the homemade dips, which are actually made not with fleishige kalim utensils, but they're made with fleishiks. They are fried. I think the ones are eggplant one. Let me explain. In commercial kitchens, have different types of equipment than we have in the house. A commercial fryer is like nothing that any of us has in our home. A commercial fryer can have about 30 quarts of oil in it, approximately. I had to do the math for someone last year. He had a problem in a fryer of his, and a repairman came in to repair it. And he turned around for 2 minutes, and suddenly realized the guy took out a food thermometer out of his pocket, and he put it into the oil because he wanted to see how hot it was getting, to see exactly what the problem was. Now you realize this repairman was in Wanglese, you know, checking out where he fried his pork yesterday and to see how it worked, you know. So it was a question if it has to be kasher. Now this is a nasty piece of equipment, the kasher, to drain all the oil and to get it clean. It's doable, but it's a really nasty job. But based on the size of the food thermometer and the amount of the oil that's in there, there was no issue that it was 100% kosher. They didn't have to do anything. So typically you have about 30 quarts of oil. It's a type of oil which doesn't break down much in heat. It's a very expensive oil that they buy for commercial use. And it lasts much longer in terms of it doesn't break up by the heat. And they can stay there for weeks, this oil. I don't know how long, but weeks and weeks. Yeah. So consequently... Listen, what do you want? Eating fried and you're complaining about healthy? Come on. You know. Now, consequently, I don't know how often, I really don't know that I've never been responsible for it, so I don't know how often they drain them out, but I can't imagine too often. But basically what happens, and this you have to understand a lot of things, that in a fleishige establishment, whenever they fry something, they are frying it in the same oil in which they fry chicken. When you go to the pizza place and you buy falafel balls, the people, as I say, sometimes are too clever by half. And part of our problem today is we're too clever by half. And we make assumptions without fully understanding the technology that's involved. You'll ask people, well, what about the falafel balls which come out of a pizza place? So most people would tell you, well, they were made in dairy kalim, so they're not exactly, you can't eat them with meat, but they're not actually milchiks. But that is mistaken, because they have cheese, nuts, and whatever that they make, that they put it and they fry it in that oil, and in the very same oil in which the cheese was fried, they now fry the falafel balls. So the falafel balls are not a question of dairy kalim, they are dairy. They have milchic oil saturated with cheese in which they are fried. Now the consequence of that is very simply. If it's Motzei Shabbos and I'm still fleishig from Shabbos, I cannot eat those falafel balls. I have to wait after the fleishige meal 6 hours until I can eat the falafel balls coming out of a typical pizza place. And this is something which is grossly misunderstood by most people, because they are extrapolating from the way they imagine things would work in their house and how it would make them in their house to the way a commercial establishment works. But a commercial establishment has a frying machine, for a deep oil fryer, and the oil is used repetitively for all the different products that they make. Yeah, Rachel. We have signs, but people don't listen to the signs.
Even in the situation with
it says it's clearly marked meat, yes, and it's in a separate section from the parav. I found out about this on Shabbos because someone in my family brought this, and in my house they discovered that it's fleishik. So after Shabbos, in fact, I did make inquiry, and they tell me it's very clearly marked, and it's in a separate section from the parav of salads too.
Yeah.
You see, the problem is, as I said, people are a little bit too clever by half. We hang up a sign in a meal mart that everything that's in this store should be considered fleishik. We put a sign in the pizza place, everything that's in this store should be considered milchik. But people then come and decide, well, listen, it's only fleishik akelim or milchik akelim. You know, without fully comprehending what's going on in the establishment and how it's produced. And it's not produced the way we would produce it. And yes, not you're taking out a frying pan that you put away yesterday, you put some oil in it, and you're going to make a few falafel balls. It's not what's going on. So we do try. And as I say, I wish we could somehow succeed in getting the message across better. And that's one of the reasons that I chose to speak about it in this forum. So if there'll be now 40 people in Kew Gardens that know the truth, maybe in a week from now it'll be 200 people that know the truth, you know. But that's what we have to get out of our minds. The falafel balls coming out of a pizza place are milchiks. They are not made in milchik akelim. They are milchiks. They are made in oil which has cheese in it. Yeah, and there's eggplant, for example. After you adapt things, it's made in, they have some fried eggplant made in Aaron's Casino Farms. They fry the chicken in that oil, and they fry the eggplant in the same oil. It's fleishik. Okay. Yeah.
When you want, let's say you trade up some milk at night and one kasher, what do you kasher it in? Do you kasher it in the fleishik pot, the milk pot, hard pot?
There are two ways in this world to live in this world. There's one way that's made for geniuses, and one way that's made for mortal men. So the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Reish Tufnun Beis rather told us that when it comes to kashering, we should live in a way that is just good for mortal men and not for geniuses. So consequently, what we did is to avoid all the conceivable problems of trying to kosher something on the same day that it became treif. Now, if you're a Moshe Feinstein Zatzal, you probably could keep track of all the things you have to keep track and make sure that it comes out right. But if you go down even one step below that, it gets pretty hot. So the Shulchan Aruch already instituted a minhag that we don't kosher anything on the day that it becomes treif. And the best thing to do was to use pots. If we use pots that weren't used in the last 24 hours, and this item wasn't used in the last 24 hours, then we don't have to worry how we koshered, why we koshered, etc. If the pot was used in the last 24 hours, then I have to make sure that the pot is consistent with the ultimate status of the spoon or the fork that I'm putting in. So if I have a fleishig pot, which was used today for fleishigs, I can kasher in it, but I can only kasher fleishigs in there, fleishig spoons. And for parv, I need a parv pot, and for milchiks, I need a milchik pot. So life becomes a lot simpler if the pot wasn't used for 24 hours, the spoon wasn't, that's tray has been put away for 24 hours, so now nothing can make anything else treif at this point. So therefore I can kasher whatever I want, wherever I want, and everything comes out kosher, and you put it back to where you want it to be. So that's the way we resolve this problem. So as I say, because the Shulchan Aruch decided we shouldn't write a Shulchan Aruch for geniuses, but really rather for normal human beings. Now, one of the problems that we face, unless we have a very large kitchen, if you have a large kitchen, you could actually have the luxury of having one stovetop dedicated to the fleishiks, one to the milchiks, and parv, I guess, you keep away from whichever one is actually using it, put the parv on the other one to keep it away from everything else, and life would be simple. But it doesn't always work. We don't always have that amount of space. And consequently, we tend often that the milachiks, the parv, and the fleishiks are all made on the same stovetop. Now, caution number one, I tell people all the time, is really try very, very strenuously to avoid having more than one type of these three on the stovetop at any one time. And especially when you want to fry, especially then. Just clear the stove, the decks of everything else. If you're frying chicken, don't have any parva pots there, don't have milachika pots there, just get everything out of the way and have the space wide open. Because things do tend to splash. When you fry, they especially splash. And even if you're cooking a pot of soup, if it gets boils up a lot, sometimes it spritzes out and it gets all over the stovetop. And if you have parva kalim there and milachika kalim there, now you have kalim with shilas. So clear the area. That's step number one. That will avoid a huge amount of shilas. Make life easier for me too. So clear the area. Now, let's touch a number of things. The halacha, one of the things that we can actually use, both for milachiks and fleishiks, is a stovetop. And the halacha has two very specific reasons for it. One is that since it's an open flame, the flame burn tends to burn up whatever falls under it, and therefore we consider that the grates never absorb anything. That before they can, anything gets absorbed, they just burn up. And secondly, we have a principle which is called two kederas, two pots, which means the following. Let's say I have a corn soup and a chicken soup next door to each other, and it happens to be the two pots touched each other. I'm moving something around, and boom, the two pots touched. So the halacha is that as long as it's totally dry, there's no steam and no liquid at the point of connection, then everything is kosher. And we go back to where we were before, and there's no problem. If there's any liquid there, then we have shilas. So this is the principle of two kederas. So normally, if I put a pot down on the metal grate, so what happens is I have two pieces of metal touching each other without liquid, and therefore it's kosher. Now, one of the things we do have to watch out for, thank you, is that our home kitchens are not designed like commercial kitchens. Commercial kitchens, from the cook standpoint, are very, very good places. Why? Because everything is utilitarian, and nothing is for beauty. There is no such thing in a commercial kitchen as something which is not made of stainless steel. Every countertop, every tabletop, it's basically impossible to singe anything that exists in that kitchen. It's made for heavy duty use. You can take the hottest pot that you want and put it down on any surface and nothing's gonna happen. We live in a house. We don't live in a commercial establishment, so beauty is also a consideration besides functionality. And because of that, we want the countertops to look a certain way and made of a certain material. And we don't always want to take a burning hot pot out of the stove or the oven and put it down on a countertop. Maybe it'll crack, maybe it'll singe, etc. So where do we put hot things down? So we have one place we discovered. One place in the kitchen is safe. If you put it on the grates on the stovetop, that's the one place that's designed in a home kitchen that nothing's going to happen. You can put whatever hot you want down on it, and it's fine. Now, the problem is, that's fine. But the problem is now, after we take off the hot things, and before we go on, we have to make sure that that's clean, that we didn't spill anything. Because if we spilled, which now spilled when there's no fire underneath. So now we spilled some fleishiks on there, which is not going away because there's nothing to burn it up. Now we're going to put on a milachik or a parva pot, and we're sitting on a place that has fleishiks on it. So this is because of the fact that we use the grates for a place to put down hot pots after we take off the hot pots and we want to put it back into regular service, we should just take a moment to make sure that they're clean, that there's nothing that's there. Now we have, you can open the fire to burn it off, you can do a lot of things, but just make sure. Now we have the heterum for using, you know, grates, which were used for milchus and fleishiks, are so strong that bottom line halacha, we're not talking chumras, we have a lot of chumras, but bottom line halacha is the following. Suppose it's Erev Pesach, Pesach night, yeah, and your cleaning lady is there, and she takes a pot of chazer and pasta and puts it onto your grate, on your fleishik stovetop, on your Pesach stovetop, on the night of Yontov. Now you find it there, and you want to shoot her dead. But now the question is, what's the status of that stovetop? Nothing spilled there, she just cooked over there. So the bottom line halacha is, you can take your chicken soup in the knedlach for the seder and put it on right after she took off her thing, and it's kosher. Okay? We don't tend to do such things. We have chumras, we kasha, we do certain things. But absolute bottom line halacha, it's kosher. But we do have to be careful, as I said, from things that we put down which can spill on them. We also have to be careful something else. This I discovered also in California when I came to Chaim Eli's Chasana. So there's a person there among the people that know me. So they were waiting for me to come. And the day that I came, they came and they collected me from where I was. They lived a few blocks away and they brought me to their house. And I discovered a new type of stovetop that I hadn't seen until then, which is that there were a number of burners all around the outside. In the middle, there was a grate with no fire under it. I guess if you want to slide something off the fire, whatever, that's a place that you slide it off, you know, let it cool down there, etc. But it has no fire under it. Now, because of the fact that there's no fire under it, this is not a good idea to be using this for milchiks and fleishiks. So I told them to use it for one. Decide what you want it for. Milchiks, fleishiks, parv, and just use it for that. Don't use it for anything else. Because here you do not have the basis of the fire burning constantly underneath to rectify the problem of bosa v'chalof. So if you have such a type of stove, you do have to be careful about that.
The fire doesn't go over the whole grate.
It's enough heat that we're not concerned. Remember, you have a pot and you have grates, the heat spreads. Well, that's fine if you put on the fire first to burn it up. Put on the fire and burn it up. Take a few minutes and burn it off. Yeah, then you'd be fine, yeah.
Is there a difference between gas and electric oven?
Yes, no, there's not a difference. The only electric just tends relatively to get hotter than the gas in terms of the metal, because the grates on an electric stove just about turn red hot when you put it on high. If they hadn't turned red hot, if you put even anything on top of them, they will immediately, if it's on for a couple of minutes, it will turn red hot, which is more than you need to kosherize the grates even for Pesach. The halacha states that there are two different ways of kosherizing through heat. One is that it turns red hot. One is that we say it reaches Lieben Kahl. Lieben Kahl means that if I put straw, tissue paper on it, it would singe. And that's as much as we need to kosherize this, yeah.
Two questions. Going back to the fish, if you have two pans tightly covered, one with fish and one with meat, you bake them in the oven at the same time?
If they would be tightly covered, the answer is yes. Now, let me just digress for a moment, but you have to make sure they're tightly covered. Now, let me digress for a moment, and that is, you're talking about, you know, ovens. So let's talk a little bit about ovens for a moment. Now, if you're one of the fortunate ones that has a double oven, so you have one for milchiks, one for fleishiks, then life is a lot simpler. If you don't, so then it's a question exactly how to work the milchiks and the fleishiks in the same oven. Now, step...
And the parv.
So first let me make life easy for you with the parv. in from my perspective, that you can make the parv on the same day that you make the fleishiks, even 5 minutes after you made the fleishiks, not simultaneously. Let's say you just roasted the chicken, take it out, let any steam that's in the oven escape, and then you can put your cake in and bake that cake, and that cake is parv. And you can even put, or if you made a challah, you can put cream cheese on that challah. That's how parv it is. However, before we get lose sight, let's add one very important consideration. And that important consideration is the following. That you should not be putting a parv or a milchik, a pan, on a rack where you made fleishiks. So you need to do one of two things. Either you want to go upscale and buy yourself a separate rack for the parv and for the milchiks, or at least put one sheet, and even preferably there would be a milah to have more than one sheet of aluminum foil underneath, on top of the rack and under the pan, so that in case there's any grease or anything that's left on the rack, it will not affect the kashrus of what's in the pot. So that's step number one. So that's as far as parv is concerned. And parv, I'm very liberal.
Wait. Always?
Always. If you use it for fleishiks, so... And you figure out what you do the most. What you do the most, just use the oven regularly. So fleishiks is what you make most in the oven, so you use the oven regularly for fleishiks. For the parv and the milchik, step number one is you cover them on the bottom. You cover the racks on the bottom. One, at least once, and there's a mile even to doing it twice. Two layers. Or the oven has to be not clean for the parv. It doesn't... it could have little specks here and there. If you have a big grease spill on the bottom, then you have to get it out before you start that. That's true, because that's going to make a lot of fumes, heavy fumes in the oven. But if you just have little specks here and there for the parv, it doesn't make a difference. Now the question is what to do for the milchiks. And preferably, I follow the view of Rav Moshe Feinstein's Hatzal, that let's say the milchiks is the minority of what you make in the oven, is you cover the milchiks tightly on top. And then you have no problem, and that's true even if you made fleishiks today in the oven. If you put the aluminum foil under it and you tightly close the top, you can make milchiks the same day, and there's no shiloh whatsoever.
Double.
Two sheets on the bottom, one sheet on top. One sheet on top is enough. Same thing. So whichever is the most, leave open, and that's, let's say, the parv. The parv you could leave open if it's milchik parv, but just make sure underneath it's not in contact with the racks.
What about 24 hours?
Now, there are sheetis. If you do this method, you don't have to wait 24 hours.
But if it is 24 hours?
If it is 24 hours, you still have to put something underneath. Then there is basis to be less concerned with the covering. But I'll tell you, the rabbanim of pre-war, we're not happy with that either. You know, the sheeta, which was in vogue, you know, before the war in this country, and my mother, Allah Hashalom, grew up with that, and those of her door, that was obvious, of the Rabbanim of pre-war. The Rabbanim of pre-war insisted that when you went from milchiks to fleishiks, you had to wait 24 hours, and then first put it on high heat, like for an hour, before they let you change it over. And a part of the reason is to make sure that this, you know, you don't have grease left in the oven. You don't have to do that. The way I told you suffices.
What?
No, because since you cover, they allowed you to cook openly after that. Mm-hmm. Since I'm telling you to cover the milchiks,
really baking is not covering
the parv. It's not relevant to the parv. Parv has its own status. Yeah. So a cheesecake, yes. Yeah. So what about what? So then you'd have to kosher it in between if you don't. Or you could do something else. And that is, if you have a separate broiler in your oven, if you have a separate broiler, what you could do is like this, bake it cooked. And for the finishing part, put it into the broiler. And just to finish it. Now the broiler, since it has a flame on the top, we're not concerned with this problem of the fumes coming up from it. So therefore, that would be one way to get around the problem you're talking about. But other than that, you should kosher it, yeah. Kosher an oven. If you have self-cleaning, do a self-cleaning cycle. If you don't have a self-cleaning cycle, clean it out, and at least put it on the highest heat for an hour. Preferably, if it's not on the same day as much, it would be far better if you should wait 24 hours in between. You know, wait 24 hours and then put it on high heat and then do it. Yeah.
Are there any considerations
about
fish?
No, just they shouldn't be simultaneously. They shouldn't be there simultaneously. More than that, I wouldn't worry about it. Again, if it's a power of a pot, underneath is my biggest problem. Yeah.
Going back on top of the burner, so you don't have to worry about the burner so much, but what about what's on top of yours?
Oh, this is, let's go to the next issue. You know, probably the biggest change in kitchens from a generation back to now is the arrival of the microwave oven. Now, the microwave is a tremendous thing, but the problem is where you're going to put it. You know, there's only limited space. So the kitchen designers had a genius idea. They're going to put it on top of the stovetop. So therefore, it functionally really doesn't take away any more useful space in the kitchen, because the area that's over the stovetop and under the cabinets you weren't using for anything until now anyhow. So that became the genius place to put microwaves. Now the problem is that because of that, oftentimes what happens is the space between the top of the pots and the microwave is a very small space. Now, if you observe that you're getting steam buildup on the bottom of the microwave, then you know you have a problem. So basically what you should do, if you are getting steam buildup, is the ones in the back use only for milchiks, only for flasiks. Or alternatively, just make sure that everything that you're going to put in the back is going to be closed. In other words, I'll leave the flasiks open and the milchiks and the parv I'll keep closed, so that I don't have, you know, huge amounts of steam going up from them. But that's just something that you do have to be careful about, the way kitchens are designed now. Usually, the hoods, they usually were a little further away than the microwaves. Usually what's happened is the space where the hood is, now they drop the microwaves down lower into that area and they cut their space in about half what it once was.
Can you cover with aluminum foil, say, within a day?
Yes, you could cover it. But it's the same that I do for Pesach. That's what I do, yeah.
Go back to the cheesecake in the oven.
Yeah. If you, again, if you took milch, you did milchiks or fleishiks, once you took them out of the oven and you let any steam out, you could make a challah, which will be par right after, which is parv. Yes, even if it was open, even if you cooked the fleishiks open.
No, but does that mean that it's completely clean, or how?
It doesn't have to be, as long as there's no huge spill on the bottom, then you're all right. Yeah. You should be careful. But where it's vented, don't keep a milchik apach while you're cooking fleishiks, because that could be very, very hot steam coming out of there.
Just not in the back, in the
Yes. Keep it away from the vent. Some vents come up under one of the burners, in fact. You have to know how your stove is designed. Yeah. Is it hot to the touch? Is the steam hot to the touch when it gets there? Check it. Check it. Oftentimes it's not. Yeah.
To wash a power pot in your milk or your place should sit. Can you put it down?
Listen, if it's clean, the sink, you know, put it down, I would not see a problem. You don't have to put it down, my toy from my arm. If you did put it down, I wouldn't care, I wouldn't worry too much about it.
You can wash it with soap
and water.
Yeah.
You have to set the grate or anything. It's better, good. All is better if you do, you know. But as I say, I'm not particularly concerned. I don't see a big problem with it. Yeah. Well, listen, obviously if the water's cold, you don't have problems, but, you know, usually you want to wash with hot water, you know. Yeah, if it did cold, it would not be an issue, yeah.
When you're pouring pasta, like steaming water into the thing?
Okay, let me explain this a little bit. The question is the following, that usually the things that we cook water in the kitchen, whatever they are, regular kettles, electric ones, whatever, tend to be parv. Now, a lot of times we want to pour hot water into things, but particularly it's true with fleishiks. Now, sometimes the fleishiks is underneath, and we let water out from like an electric coffee maker, and sometimes we pour from a tea kettle from above. Now, what we want, it's really the best thing to do in this scenario is have a glass pitcher, put the water into a glass pitcher, and pour it from the glass pitcher into the pots on the stove. Because a glass pitcher doesn't become milchiks, doesn't become fleishiks, doesn't become treif. When you get too close to the steam, when there's a lot of steam coming up, and you're going to get the pot too close, then you're going to have real shilas on the parva status of that tea kettle. So if you're going to do it, you should try to keep it far away. But the smartest idea is to put the water into a glass pitcher and pour it from a glass pitcher. Then you will avoid, you know, most of the problems that you could conceivably have.
Does Pyrex have the same...
Pyrex has the same status as glass. Now, just we're talking now about the steam coming out of pots. One of the things that you have to be careful about is how you pour spices into boiling pots. The steamy area above a pot, the Shach writes in the name of the Ran, is considered as if it's in the soup of the pot itself. So you don't want to be taking your pepper and pouring it out in that area of the pot. So either put it into a spoon and throw it in from a spoon, etc. Don't pour it directly into the pots. In commercial, I insist that they have separate ones for milchiks and fleishiks. I don't let them use the same spices on both sides of the kitchen. The spices are clearly marked dairy, meat, and that's it. And they only use them on one side because of this reason. So this you do have to be careful about. Yes?
What about separate ketchups and milchiks?
You don't need separate ketchups, but that really depends on the age of your children. You know, some children at a young age, you know, just they put the ketchup right into the meat. You know? There is basis to be made. I don't know that I personally do it. Other than anything that you cut with, I wouldn't do it with. The other things, if you want to be made, you have a good basis to do it. What? Yeah, you can do it. There is basis to be made for that. Do you need a separate pot for boiling eggs? The answer to that question is historically yes and presently no. And I'll tell you exactly the reason for it. And before our forefathers arrived on these shores, and maybe once when they did come, I don't know, you know, in those years, 100 years ago, how it was. But basically, when you bought eggs, there were fertilized eggs too. And a fertilized egg is treif. So the question was, you could wind up, in fact, that you opened up two eggs, and both of those eggs were treif. So you didn't want this pot to be flying around with other things in case that happened. And therefore, some people even used, a lot of people that you'll remember, used a can, an empty can. They didn't even use a pot because they were afraid what would happen if they found a treif egg. In the way the chicken farms run, egg farms run nowadays, there are no fertilized eggs on an egg farm. So even if you find a blood spot in the egg itself, the only thing that's actually treif is the spot of blood. The rest of the egg is actually kosher. There's a minig, Ramosha wrote, that we don't use the whole egg. But it's as a chumrah. It's haradin, it's mutter. And certainly if it fell into something else, so then you just remove the spot of blood. And the egg is certainly not a question. You don't have to be mevatel the egg. And if you lost the spot of blood, that tiny spot of blood, and whatever food you put it into is certainly going to be bottle also. There's certainly 60 times as much as that tiny spot. So that was the reason that classically there were egg pots, and it's the reason today that generally we tend not to have egg pots because the eggs are non-fertilized eggs.
But boiling the eggs in multiples of three?
Same reason. It's a non-issue today. The whole issue was in case one of them was treif. The reason was in case one was treif, so they wanted it to be bottle that the chad betray, our whole story, whatever. I don't know if I could figure out the whole story exactly, but they'll, that's where it came from. Nowadays, yeah, you can boil one egg and you're fine. Yes. I didn't hear the question. I'm sorry. This, you, if you, to the extent you can avoid it, you should. If you can't avoid it, it's not going to render the colander treif. But you should certainly make sure that the sink is clean before you put it down. That you should do. Well, you know, even a power of a colander, is less problematic. But again, you should still make sure the sink is clear before you put it down. Yeah. Even on the cucumber salad, if you asked me, if you bought a cucumber salad in an establishment that makes fleishiks, then the onions are probably cooked with fleishik knives.
So even if they're like pre-packaged?
Unless they're marked. If they're marked parv, that's something else. Yes. Okay, I think we've basically finished what we need to do tonight. So I think there's some interesting things to think about. And Be'ezus Hashem, I look forward that we'll have other opportunities to get together. Be'ezus Hashem, Yisbar.
You know me, I'm shy. I can't ask my questions in public. If the fleishika spoon was in the frame for a long period of time, the frame becomes fleishika.
Yes.
But we can use it on gefilte fish?
You can use it on gefilte fish.
You know what, you can talk about the same.
I'll come up with the Pesach show.
So this is Yasper, ask for the matzah, also of your name. I didn't want to forget because Friday and
Tiskel of Itzvus.
So like she said,
if
the boiling water,
it's not going to render it. It's not going to kill it.
So what about like I once asked Rabbi Grumblatt the Shaila if I'm making hot cocoa from my china. So he originally told me that the steam going up.